Welcome to the Common Geeking Program, a book club podcast where, each week, three of us read up on a topic, then discuss it from geeky, nerdy perspectives. This week, I'm your host, Matt Canavan, and we will be discussing sequels and Shrek. I'm joined by two people, each of whom who have selected a domain they think connects to our topic and theme this week. They are...
Hi, I am Laura, and today I'll be talking about Game of Thrones.
Hello, I'm Taimul Chowdhury, or Chowder, whichever you prefer, and I'll be talking about Spider-Man, the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies, starring Tobey Maguire.
The good ones, honestly.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of Tom Holland or...
I love Tom Holland. I'm not a fan of Andrew Garfield. I like Tobey Maguire too. I think I like Tom Holland more, but I still think Tobey Maguire is great.
Is Tom Holland the one that is the newest Spider-Man?
Yeah,
the Marvel one.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
Yeah,
he seems to embody it pretty well. Anyway,
I don't feel so good. All right. We're going to start by summarizing our topic and domains before we openly discuss. Finally, we close with a competitive rating section to determine who best contributed and whether today's topic is enjoyable. Don't judge me too hard. All right, so let's get started. So our topic this week is going to be sequels and basically what makes sequels good or not and why they do that. So my topic was Shrek 2, which is part of the incredibly successful Shrek series. Now, I chose Shrek 2 because I felt that it was a good example of the right way a sequel is done. And just to go over the premise of Shrek 2, it takes place right after Shrek, after he saves Fiona and they get married and stuff. And then they go to Far, Far Away, I think it was, and yes. They meet Princess Fiona's parents.
They've had their honeymoon and now it's time to meet the in-laws, you know?
Yes.
And they did not know that Fiona and Shrek were both ogres. So that was a fun surprise.
Yes, that is really fun. And then, you know, he goes on his adventure, ends up having to save Fiona from, well, basically being human and not an ogre because beauty is in the eye of the beholder or something. I don't fucking know.
There's a fairy godmother who actually kind of evil and turns out is the mother of Prince Charming, who is supposed to marry Fiona. And you find out they had kind of a back end deal with the king. And so she's really pissed that her son isn't going to be the king. And so she tries to trick Shrek into making Fiona human again so that she marries Prince Charming.
Yep. Yeah. So generally a positive reception for Shrek 2 because while it was a sequel to Shrek 1,
which
it had its own. Go ahead, Chandler.
Yeah. Keep in mind that Shrek 1 was a very successful film, like one of the best selling films at the time, you know?
Yes.
It's a great movie.
It's amazing. Yeah. And Shrek 2, one of the reasons why it was so popular was because it had the same core group of characters, but they went on a completely different adventure, I feel like. And that really allowed them to like express their characters in different ways, you know? Because, you know, when we first meet Shrek, he has absolutely no interest of getting married or anything of the sort like that. And then you get to Shrek 2, he's still kind of his grumpy, ogre-y self, but he's trying to basically fit into this new lifestyle of his.
All in the name of love.
Yeah, something like that. But it was a very, very good story, and it wasn't a total copy of the original.
It also added some fun extra dimensions. So, like, you meet Prince Charming in the first one, or Charming, I guess he's not really Prince, in the first one, but you find out that his mother is the fairy godmother, and she's got a side deal where... you know, the king was a toad the whole time or whatever.
Yes.
So, like, there's a whole backstory there. And so it really goes into a lot of depth. This is also the movie where we meet Puss in Boots, who is a fantastic character.
Yeah. He's great. I am Puss in Boots.
Yeah, it was really clever how they made Puss in Boots this, like, ass kicker throughout. Or ass kicker. although he does do that, ass kisser. Like,
Little, kind of a big difference there.
Yes, very big difference. But he does do both, though. He does kiss ass, which is very accurate to his fairy tale counterparts in a way. So yeah.
Yes. All right. So that's my topic. So I guess now we go into the domains now, right?
Sure thing.
Let's move on to the domains where our representatives get to summarize what they have brought to the table. Laura, all you.
Fab. So I would like to first point out to the listeners that can totally see this. As we're discussing which domains we're going to be doing, and by that I mean introducing myself, I was wrapping myself up in a Game of Thrones blanket. So that was fun.
Jealous.
So I'm talking about Game of Thrones today. It is, I'm talking about the books, which I've read all of. It's been a while, so forgive me if I get some of the details wrong. But It's a super popular book series by George R.R. Martin that spans, I think currently we're at 6 books and we're waiting for the 7th. So the book series goes A Game of Thrones, A Clash of Kings, A Storm of Swords, A Feast for Crows, and A Dance with Dragons. We are currently waiting for The Winds of Winter. And then we're also expecting A Dream of Spring.
A lot of nouns of nouns here, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, we're on book 5. We're waiting for book 6 right now. And I would say somewhere around book 4 or 5, we start meeting a whole lot of new characters. But it kind of makes for an interesting series because it's got so much going on. Anyway, Game of Thrones is a huge epic fantasy that is set in like an olden time days that follows the Game of Thrones, where everybody is vying for the Iron Throne. There are 7 kingdoms. Each of them are a little bit different, characterized by the landscape and the type of people that live there. Each of them kind of have like a ruling family that is kind of the keeper of those lands. And so the king dies.
And everyone works together and gets along perfectly well.
It's such a cheerful, wonderful story. It's just really heartwarming.
Yep.
pretty much the opposite of that. But George R.R. Martin has woven together this incredibly complicated world that involves so many politics and interconnections and relationships and love and hate. Mostly hate, I would say.
A lot of hate, some revenge.
A lot of killing, tons of revenge. And one thing that he does really well is create these very fleshed out areas of his world that you kind of learn and follow throughout the series. So the first book, you get to really meet like the Starks, which are a main family, and the Lannisters, which are a main family, and then some of the other families of different areas of the Seven Kingdoms as well. And then as you go through the books, you kind of learn through these families, and you kind of learn the world through them. And something that I think is very complicated is that the sequels can both enrich your experience so much, because obviously you meet these characters and you want to learn more about them, but it's also gotten to the point where there's so much going on that it can be a little bit challenging to follow, and I think that there are times when sequels can kind of run on a little bit and need to be edited a little bit better. But more on that in the discussion. So it's basically an epic fantasy where families are trying to become the most powerful in lots of different ways.
Because a chair made out of swords totally constitutes that.
It does. It does indeed.
It really doesn't sound pleasant to sit on when you think about it, you know?
It really
doesn't. Well, it's not supposed to be, though. That's the way it was designed.
It's like the weight of responsibility in a crown, except the knives of responsibility.
I mean, I guess it certainly does make someone a cut above the rest, you know?
Oh, God, Chowder.
All right. So that concludes this episode. Okay. Chowder, please don't punish us too much.
All right. As I said before, I'm talking about the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies. The first one was released in, I want to say, 2002. Where is my Wikipedia page that I had? No, I think I closed it.
I didn't even have time to Wikipedia this, so I apologize for my lack of detail this episode.
Yes, I was right. All right, so the first Spider-Man movie was released in 2002. It's about this high schooler named Peter Parker, who, by freak accident, was bitten by a radioactive spider. Or in this case, a genetically enhanced spider, and gained the powers of a spider. His initial instinct is to try to make profit off this and make money and try to impress a girl. He chooses not to stop a robber, and as he later finds out, that robber, you know, kills his uncle, and he realizes that with great power comes great responsibility. And
nice.
And yeah, that's Spidey for you. A story that nobody's heard, nobody knows about. You know, a little obscure.
I was excited to learn about something new this week, so thank you.
And I'm specifically going to talk about Spider-Man 2. This movie was released 2 years after. It picks off where the last movie left off, or Peter Parker / Spider-Man is doing superhero stuff, and this movie focuses on just how that superheroing is affecting his own personal life. We see Peter Parker's life is kind of going to shit because of Spider-Man. He's struggling in college. He's really pissing off the people around him because he's just being unreliable. And like midway through, Spider-Man loses his powers and he goes, you know what? Screw it. I'm just going to be Peter Parker. Screw responsibility. And, you know, by the end, he's like, no, the city needs me. And, you know, stops Dr. Octopus. And, yeah, that is pretty much Spider-Man 2, as poorly told by me. The reason I wanted to talk about Spider-Man 2 was because I think it's a movie that manages to take what the first movie, take the foundation in which the first movie was built, and like really explore this character and like really understand it. And also it manages to do something very ambitious with its own story as well as its own special effects and stuff. And yeah, it was an example of a good sequel that is better than the original, and I really wanted to talk about it.
Yeah. Nice. Okay.
Cool. With all of our topics and domains summarized, let's move on to the discussion. So my first question for the two of you guys is, what makes a sequel good and how can it be better than the original material?
Can I go? I'm really excited about this.
Yes. Okay. Go for it.
So I think one of the things that makes sequels good are that you fall in love with the characters and the world in the first movie or book or TV episode. I guess TVs don't really have sequels. And the great thing about a sequel is that you can spend more time with them. So you get to learn more about the characters, you get to delve deeper into the world, and you get to, you know, you don't have to spend the whole time getting introduced to somebody because you already know them. Mm-hmm. And so you get to really inhabit that person a little bit more. So like with Shrek 2, you know, in the first episode, they have to spend a decent amount of time being like, this is an ogre. Ogres are cranky. Ogres are like onions. They have many layers. but in Shrek 2, we already know that. And so we get to spend a little bit more time.
And like, we already know that he has insecurities about being an ogre. So like,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
Yeah. And so we get to spend more time in that particular lair of his that insecure of himself, but also he really loves Fiona. And like, you know, we know that from the first movie, but they don't have to spend time kind of talking about it. They can just delve into kind of the challenges of being in a relationship as an ogre.
Yeah, Spider-Man is also like that. Like in the first movie, a lot of time is dedicated to showing the origins of Spider-Man, how Peter Parker came to be who he was. And because of that, like, some things are lacking in that first movie, like the Green Goblin, who just, despite being played by Willem Dafoe, who is wonderful.
He is a magical human.
Yes.
Is he human? He's magical, whatever he is.
Yep. He is a being. We'll say that. But, like, as a character, the Green Goblin doesn't really get to be much of a character. In Spider-Man 2, because they've already introduced Spider-Man, we can, A, get to know more about Peter Parker, how this is affecting him, what is the struggles he is having, beyond just, oh, shit, shit is happening to me.
Yeah.
But rather, how is shit happening to me now?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But like the other great thing is that we get to have a really good villain in Dr. Octavius, who has like a lot of pathos to him, you know, and like is a great contrast to Spider-Man. So I think what makes a great sequel is expanding upon the foundation left by the first one, that you can use that to, as Laura said, learn more about the characters, but also have other characters take the spotlight as well.
Yeah, and in relation to Game of Thrones and the sequels, and I know that I probably should have chosen a specific Game of Thrones book as a sequel, but it is what it is.
Well, that's fine. I figured you were going to talk about the whole series, so I got a question for you.
Yeah.
Don't worry.
Perfect. But in kind of a terms of like a long book series like that, like an epic book series, you get to get a peek into certain families or traditions, or, you know, whether or not this world has magic in it in the first book. And it gives you so much space to then delve into those areas. Like, George R. R. Martin is an incredibly creative person. And so he's got all these amazing ideas. And to give yourself the sequels to be able to give you time to explore each of those areas and like really learn about it and really flesh out the worlds is really cool. And the thing that makes, you know, the second and the third books maybe even better in some cases than the first is that you got a taste of those in the first, but then you get to see it come to life and you get to see those changes that are going on that were hinted at, and you get to see like, oh, winter is coming is something that was said all over the place in the first book. But then as the series progresses, like, you get to see what that means, and it takes its time kind of going through, like, what does winter coming actually mean? How does that affect the characters and the world? What does it mean for this like crazy magic? And it's so good to kind of get a sneak peek of some of those things in the first book, and then the satisfaction of getting to read more about them in depth in later books.
Mm-hmm. So that actually feeds almost perfectly into my next topic of discussion, was the difference between sequels versus series.
Hmm.
So to me, I felt like part of it has to do with the medium, you know, like where's the material coming from? So something like a movie, you think of something like a sequel, you're only going to sit down for like hour and a half, maybe 2 hours, and you have that limited time to really be a part of that universe that the director is showing you, you know?
Hmm.
And then something like a series, which I guess you would see more in like books like the Game of Thrones, you can go at your own pace, you know, to really explore that world that's getting shown to you, you know?
Yeah.
I think the big difference between a sequel and a series is that the entire arc of the story is already planned out, whereas a sequel, the first story is like its own completed thing, and then something is added onto it. Like with Shrek and Spider-Man, the first movies of those are complete stories. If like nothing was made after the first Spider-Man, nothing was made after the first Shrek, they would still be complete stories. You wouldn't have any questions about it. Whereas if like the Song of Fire and Ice series, I'm assuming the books work like this, ended after the first book, there was nothing after that, there would be so many questions left unanswered.
Yeah, there would definitely be a lot of questions. That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess I'm just kind of thinking about the reason that I chose Game of Thrones, which is I think it shows where series can also go wrong a little bit, or where sequels can go wrong in some ways, where I guess it depends on like if we're talking specifically about like a sequel that is the second of two, then this doesn't really apply.
Right.
But if we're talking about sequels where like the Fast and the Furious has like seven movies, you know, that could definitely be a sequel. It's a little bit more like that, where there becomes a time if a franchise is super popular, the creators can almost kind of lose perspective because their domains have gotten so popular that the people that were editing them before take a step back and say, well, oh, well, this person has created such great work before, like, just let them do what they want. But the reason why they were so good to begin with is because somebody was editing down their ideas.
Right.
And so I think that that's something that can happen with sequels. It doesn't happen all the time. And obviously, the longer a franchise is, the more that can happen. But it's easy for somebody that has a popular franchise to kind of lose track or lose thread of the main storyline because they just get so wrapped up in it and nobody's editing what they're doing anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the Spider-Man series ran into the opposite problem. There was too much meddling. Like, the first and second movies were great because they were this ambitious take. They weren't quite doing what people expected. Like, the first two movies actually stylistically are very campy and very much model themselves after, like, early Spider-Man, like, the 60s and stuff, where there wasn't so much melodrama, I want to say.
Well, okay, there was melodrama, but... But, like, the third movie, Sam Raimi wanted the movie to be about Sandman, and just Sandman, but executive meddling forced him to, A, put in Venom, even though there wasn't really a place for Venom in that movie.
No, there wasn't.
And B, to add in a whole bunch of, like, romance subplots and love triangles and shit.
And C, the emo flap.
Thus, emo Peter Parker.
Oh my god.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, and that ended up hurting the movie, because where the first two movies had this very rock-solid theme of exploring the idea of great responsibility as it relates to great power, the third movie, like, loses sight of that, because it has to now spend time on two villains that it wants to explore.
Right.
And it ends up pleasing nobody, because Venom does not appear until the last few minutes, and that pissed off so many people.
Yeah.
And Sandman doesn't quite get to be explored to the fullest extent, which is sad, because he's one of the main Spider-Man villains. He's one of the Sinister Six, so, yeah.
Cool. So the next thing that I wanted to bring up was actually not so much Shrek, but actually the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Would you say that those are more sequels or a series of movies?
I would say a series of movies, because while they're all self-contained, they were planned way ahead of time, like years ahead of time, before even the script might have even been made, you know?
Okay.
Well, like, what do you think is the difference between a series and a sequel then? Like, do you think that the sequels are not planned in advance?
I think it has less to do with...
Because, yeah, I was like, oh, yeah, no, the Marvel is totally a series of movies. But then I was like, well, then what makes it not... What makes them not sequels of each other? Like, I don't
know. Yeah, I guess it is kind of a weird gray area that I'm actually thinking about more.
Yeah, because I feel like there's definitely sequels within the Marvel universe, you know? Something like Guardians of the Galaxy, Guardians of the Galaxy 2, the Iron Man trio. I think that within those movies, Iron Man 2 is definitely more of a sequel to Iron Man 1, partially because it could be watched without relying on the rest of the universe.
Yeah, but then, like, Iron Man 3 is
right
very much picking off from the events of Avengers, and that's
post-Avengers.
I would say it's not quite fair to, like, compare, like, a shared universe to, like, either a series or a sequel, because the nature of a shared universe is that these individual characters have their own stories.
Yeah.
And, like, those stories intersect with each other, so...
Is that not like Game of Thrones, though?
Well, it's... So, I'm going to give you an example of something that I think Chowder's talking about. So, there's an author called Tamora Pierce who wrote a bunch of teen magic novels that I read, like, a ton of when I was a kid. And what was really interesting about what she did is that she wrote quartets. So all of her books were in four, but each book kind of followed a different character, but it was set in the same world. And so sometimes those characters that were a main character in one series would show up in the other one, but they weren't the main focus.
Right. Okay.
And so I think that that would be kind of a shared universe experience, where the Game of Thrones, you know, there's not one book that's dedicated to one family. And then the second book, where they kind of show up peripherally, those books are following, if not all of the families, every single book. They're generally all shown at some point within those books to kind of keep it like you're taking all the storylines along with you.
Right.
Yeah.
So I did a little bit of research here.
Okay.
Citation Wikipedia, thank you. A sequel is a literature, film, theater, television, music, or video game that continues the story of or expands upon some earlier work. In many cases, the sequel continues elements of the original story. A sequel can lead to a series in which key elements appear repeatedly. Although the difference between more than one sequel and a series is somewhat arbitrary, it's clear that some media franchises have enough sequels to become a series, whether or not originally planned as such.
Okay, that's interesting.
So, even Wikipedia says it's not 100% clear.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, the lines we're drawing here are already arbitrary to begin with. Like, it's just stuff we do to make description more convenient for us, you know?
Right.
Yeah, true.
Okay, cool. So, that brings me to the last point of the discussion that I want to talk about, and that was regarding reboots. So this one was specifically towards you, Chowder, and I'm hoping that you could talk a little bit more about all the Spider-Man reboots, starting with like the Tobey Maguire ones, and then the Andrew Garfield and Tom Holland.
All right.
So I guess what I'm curious about is what you think about how they build on each other and whether or not they could be regarded as not so much sequels, because obviously they're different like universes, different timelines, whatever, but I guess kind of their own series in a sense, you know? What do you think about that?
I don't know. It's hard to say. One, because Spider-Man Homecoming is kind of new, so like it's hard to say what direction that's going in, but I think it wouldn't really quite work, especially from the Sam Raimi stuff and the Mark Webb stuff. Mark Webb? Was that who made the... Mark Webb.
Yeah, I think so.
All right, so especially when comparing Sam Raimi to Mark Webb, because they don't really carry on similar themes. The character is really different in those two versions. All three versions, actually. Like, Tobey Maguire plays Spider-Man very dorky.
Yes.
And I think it works because Peter Parker is supposed to be socially awkward, you know? And you really get that sense when you see Tobey Maguire. Andrew Garfield's, I don't even know what they're going for with him. Like, he's supposed to be sort of outcasted, but like, A, he's too goddamn handsome.
Right.
B, he doesn't really do anything nerdy or dorky or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And Tom Holland is, like, I think trying to find some medium between the two. And for the most part, I think Tom Holland is excellent. Like, he feels like the perfect Peter Parker and the perfect Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
But one problem I have, and this might be the only one, is that his flaws, that is to say, him being socially awkward, doesn't come through. Those qualities that are supposed to be negative for Peter Parker come off as very positively. You know, like when Tobey Maguire does something dorky, you cringe.
Right.
When Holland does something dorky, it's like, oh, that's adorable.
Yeah. He is a very adorable Spider-Man. Spider-Man?
Spider-Man.
Okay, I'm dragging this on a little too long, but to bring it all in, I'm saying that, like, they're all going for very different things, and they're tied together only by the suit, only by Spider-Man.
Okay.
I think it's a really interesting thing to look at in some of the comic book universes, though, because there is so much that you can read in. Like, there's so many comics and timelines and movies and TV shows and animations. Like, there's just so much.
Yeah, heck, like, in December, Into the Spider-Verse is coming out.
Yeah. Like, what is that going to be? It actually looks pretty cool.
And it looks amazing, by the way.
Yeah, it does look really good.
Yeah. Something I wanted to say that's not really related to the question, but...
Sure.
But, like, the other movie I was thinking about doing this on was the Karate Kid movies.
Okay.
Because, you know, you have the first one, everyone knows that. The second one does something really clever, ambitious, and the third one fucks it up, much like the Spider-Man movies.
Yeah.
And I think it highlights how to do sequels, because the second one has nothing to do with the sports movie, but rather it wants to explore the themes and ideas that the first movie carried out, while the third one just wanted to rehash the first movie. It basically does the whole beat the bully at the local tournament plot again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's really frustrating. And Spider-Man, I feel, runs into a similar problem of, like, just falling into the pitfall of not using that popularity to try out something new. Because the second Spider-Man movie, really good story, because for one thing, for most of the movie, you don't see Spider-Man. And it's like, that is a crazy idea to have a super movie, hero movie where you don't have the superhero in it. And yeah, because they knew they had something people wanted to see, they could use that to try out something new.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the third one just wanted to please the crowd, and it tried too hard, and it ended up just pleasing nobody.
Yeah.
It's funny, because now that we're talking about it, I've been thinking about sequels for a while, and for some reason I could not think of a single sequel that I wanted to talk about. And now that we're sitting here and we're in the discussion, I'm like, I should have chosen Grease, because Grease 2 is like, what the fuck is that about? Or like Clueless and Clueless 2. Like, there's Legally Blonde 2. There's so many movies that have these sequels that, like, why did they even exist? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
But also, you know, have some value in their own right or entertaining. But there are so many movies with sequels that I just, like, did not think about when we were coming up on here. But
yeah, like, you know, Shrek, like, most people feel that, like, after number two, the movie's trended downwards.
I would agree with that.
And I think it's because all the movies after number two focus less on, like, taking the next logical step for the character and more like...
Here are the characters again.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Here's them in a Halloween special or...
Right.
Like, in the third and the fourth movie, instead of Shrek being, you know, comfortable being an ogre, they just bring it back to, like...
They don't really follow the natural progression of the story, and so they just kind of throw him into a random story that they think that everyone would wonder, like, hey, what would Shrek do if he was... here.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Like, right. What would Shrek do if he made a...
What would Shrek do?
Oh, God, no. What have
we
done?
That is so the episode title.
Yep.
If he made a deal with Rumpelstiltskin to, you know, do such and such.
Like, Pocahontas 2. Why didn't I talk about Pocahontas 2? Like, that is such an example of this, where, like, there was no need to continue that story.
I mean, there was no need to start that story, to be real, though.
Well, we're not going to start with that, but, like, the story that they chose for Pocahontas 2, they were like, what would Pocahontas do if she was in Europe? And you're like, I don't actually care.
Who cares?
I don't think, yeah.
I mean, in real life, she died.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yep.
Not that.
Yeah, like, the Shrek in Shrek 2 feels like a progression of the Shrek in the first Shrek movie, but, like, in the Shrek in the other Shrek movies feel like Shrek... at the beginning of the first movie. He lacks the character development.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Nice.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, thank you both for an enlightening discussion. I had to pick an adjective there, and that was the first thing that came to mind. So, great. Oh, all right. Now we move on to the ratings, and we begin by having each of our representatives rate the topic on a scale of 1 to 5 onions.
Ooh, nice. Wow, you were so ready for that. I'm so used to people being like, 1 to 5,
I've had too much time to prepare.
I am going to rate Shrek 2, I mean, it's hard. I can't believe I'm about to do this. I'm going to give Shrek 2 a 5 out of 5 onions. It is a really good sequel. I watched it again last night and, like...
Nice.
I'd forgotten so many things about it where they just... It really kept the spirit of my favorite parts of Shrek alive while bringing in some new fun elements. I love the fairy godmother. She's hilarious.
Right?
I love that they, like, go through a drive-through, like, fast food place when she's mad. Like... I love that they turned the gingerbread man turned into, like, a humongous gingerbread man
fucking
and, like,
Godzilla.
Went crazy. Like, it's just, it's a fucking great movie. I really enjoyed watching it. It's a fantastic example of a sequel. And I think in this context, I got to give it a 5 out of 5.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm going to have to give it a 4 out of 5 onions. Because I agree with Laura. It is a fantastic movie. I saw the first and second Shrek movie again. I was so prepared to, like, go, ah, oh, this hasn't aged well at all.
It did, though.
It did. I'm surprised. Like, it's full of these,
Yo, I didn't realize that the wolf was reading porn in the top of the tower, because I was too, like, I guess I just was too young last time I watched this movie. I mean, it's just...
There's a lot of subtle shit.
Yeah. It's so good.
No, the movie still holds up. Maybe some of the pop culture references are a little dated, but so are the pop culture references in Looney Tunes, you know?
Mm-hmm. Or the soundtrack. Actually, that's a lie. That soundtrack is amazing.
The soundtrack is perfect. Yeah.
Yes.
It's very early 2000s. No, like, I was prepared to go, oh man, the CGI on the humans is not that great. And you know what? It isn't, but they were very clever about it.
Yeah.
A, the way they use lighting and stuff helps to mask that. And B, the story is about how, like, normal people are kind of ugly on the inside, and they implemented that by, like, making the humans kind of ugly while the non-humans are actually pretty appealing to the eye, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even the supposedly ugly guy like Shrek. No, it's really funny. The jokes straight up made me laugh, and
yeah.
Yeah, no, it is a solid sequel, and I am very happy to know that the movie I liked as a kid
holds up.
Still good, yeah.
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 It's a classic. Okay, speaking of subtle shit, though, do you guys remember in the first Shrek, first scene where they have, like, the mom bear, the papa bear, and the baby bear caged up?
Yeah.
Right? When they're catching up all the,
yeah.
The magical creatures? Okay. And then later, when they all get put onto Shrek Swamp, you just see the daddy bear and the baby bear, and the baby bear is crying, right? And there's no mama bear. And then it cuts to Lord Fuckwad's scene, and where it had the mama bear as a rug on the floor.
Oh, no! Oh,
I didn't even notice that!
Oh, yeah.
No! Oh, God, I don't remember that at all!
Go back and look. Oh, it will scar you for life, and then you'll just end up watching it because it's Shrek.
Yeah.
All right, so next I will award a Gold Star student, giving a reward to the person who I think best... This one I wasn't prepared for.
Who'd you like best? That's all you gotta say.
fuck. I think I'm gonna go with... Laura, because she did not make as many bad puns.
I kicked my own ass there.
Yeah, it's okay. But you're also very, very positive and, you know, really contributed to the discussion. And you kind of helped out in pretty much everyone's domain, which was cool.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
I do have a question, though.
Sure.
What did I, in fact, win?
The
golden...
The golden Gingy. Maybe.
Wait,
I don't know.
What is the Gingy? I feel like I should know what that is.
Gingerbread man. You know.
Gingy! Oh, Jesus.
Gingy.
Wow. I was like, I don't understand. Is it a redhead that was in the movie? Please don't take away my golden Gingy. I still want it.
Okay, fine.
Okay, question is, how big is that Gingy? You know?
It's fucking huge.
That was a big boy.
Big boy.
The biggest boy.
The biggest boy, huh?
All right, and outro. So that about wraps it up. Thank you for listening to the Common Geeking Program. I'm your host, Matt Canavan, and you can find me at info/links. Yeah, I guess I'm on Facebook. I don't really go on Facebook, but, you know, shit happens. Maybe you'll find me. Again, I've been joined by...
I have been Laura Kramer. At some point, I'm probably going to change this, but I'm still really not on social media. I have a Facebook page, but I haven't looked at it in a while. So, Facebook us on Common Geeking Program. I'll take a look at that.
We're also joined by Taimal Chaudhary, and you can find me on Twitter at Taimal Chaudhary. You can see how that's spelled in the description.
Smart.
You can also find me sulking in the corner. Stewing Aww. Over my own depression.
No.
Oh.
I thought you did great.
You did good. Just not as good. All right. Next week, our episode will be hosted by...
The next episode will be hosted by me, Laura Kramer. It will be my first ever Common Briefing program. So we are not talking about a specific topic. We're just talking about the latest in geek and nerd culture media news. So... We're probably going to be talking a little bit about E3, even though that was a little while ago. It is the most recent thing to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we'll see about that. But we're just going to be talking about the latest in the news.
Cool. All right, well, be sure to tune in next Friday, the 27th, and follow us on Facebook or Twitter at Geeking Program. Any engagement, such as sharing a post, tagging us, or tweeting #CGP, will enter you into a raffle where you get to pick the topic for a future episode. Reviewing us on Apple Podcasts is a critical help to growing our show, and we'll read new reviews on the air. Anyways, thanks for listening, subscribing, sharing, everything. And we'll talk to you next week.
Ciao. This episode of the Common Geeking Program was hosted by Matt Canavan, joined by Laura Kramer and Taimal Chaudhary. This episode is sponsored by a surprising lack of All-Star. I don't know if I should be proud or disappointed in the three of us. The podcast is created and produced by Colin Ketchin and Jeff Levin, with this episode edited by me, Taimal Chaudhary, as well as Jeff Levin and Jocelyn Barkenhagen, and original music by Colin Ketchin. Next week will be a Common Briefing Program episode, where we'll be talking about recent geek news events, so be sure to read up on that. And thank you for listening to this podcast. Ciao! Oh,
is the first episode since the Halo episode that we were in together, right? You were in the Halo episode? Yeah. But that was my first episode. I don't know. And then I became you, and now we are separated again. And you became Austin. This is going to get very confusing for the listeners.
Wait, if Laura became Matt, and Matt became Austin, then who's driving the plane?
And I'm recording again because I wish I didn't miss that.
Same. Oh, I have my half, but